Welcome to another episode of the Your Brain Uncovered podcast, where we discuss science and science-based tools for everyday life. I'm Aya Tarabain. I'm a translational neuroscience student and a researcher at University College London. Also want to emphasize that this podcast is my personal goal of bringing zero cost to consumer information to the public. So it is quite separate from my other roles. Now in this very special episode, we will be talking about the science of thriving. Hopefully, after leaving this episode, you will come to a better understanding of the strategies required to thrive in both your academic and professional endeavors. Our special guest, Dr. Daniel Brown, who is a senior lecturer in sports and exercise psychology at the University of Portsmouth, will provide us with an overview and understanding of foundational skills needed to optimize our bodily and mental functions in order to thrive. Now, Dr. Daniel Brown has pulled together research on what makes people feel good about their life and about themselves from studies of babies, teenagers, artists, sports people, employees, and the elderly. So, I would like to ask him, without further ado, what does it exactly mean to thrive? Dr. Daniel Brown, we all have this inherent drive for self-improvement and growth, but how do you exactly go about defining what thriving is? I'm Aya Tarabain. I'm a translational neuroscience student and a researcher at University College London. Also want to emphasize that this podcast is my personal goal of bringing zero cost to consumer information to the public. So it is quite separate from my other roles. Today on this very special episode, we will be talking about the science of thriving. So I'm no expert myself, but I'm being joined by one, luckily enough. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome to the show Dr. Daniel Brown. Dr. Daniel, it's an honor to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. A little background here. Dr. Dan is a senior lecturer in sports and exercise psychology at the University of Portsmouth, and his research centers on the psychology of human excellence and well-being, so aka thriving. He especially focuses on understanding and facilitating thriving in humans, human athletes, and that involves developmental experiences, the development of assessments for interventions in sports and performance psychology as well. But mostly in general, Dr. Daniel Brown is known for pulling together research on what makes people feel good about their life and about themselves. Dr. Daniel, may I ask a question that begs itself? Why is it that you decided to devote your academic career to researching the specific science?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's lovely to be here and lovely to be talking about this topic of thriving. Why did I devote myself to it? Well, I first came across the topic when I was introduced to the areas of resilience and growth, and specifically their adversarial growth. And what I was struck by when looking at those two constructs was essentially, they were talking about good outcomes coming from bad things or negative experiences or adverse experiences. So I was really interested in how we come about having positive experiences, not just from negative events, but how we can have positive experiences in our lives in general. And so that kind of put me onto the topic of thriving. And I started to see see the term in more and more places, sort of in news headlines or following sport in the way that I do. You see teams described as thriving. And I think, well, what is it that we're talking about here? So I was kind of drawn in by those things. And then the more I kind of learn about the subject, the more I was kind of this idea about trying to create these positive atmospheres, these positive environments, how we can help people lead more enjoyable lives, but also recognizing that as we go about our lives, we are expected to deliver, we are expected to perform in certain ways. So how can we achieve those things, both for ourselves and for others, but also do it in a way which we find enjoyable and find it in a way that we feel infused and energized by doing it? So it felt like quite a positive topic to explore and to understand. And I think that's probably where it really started for me.
That's so interesting. It's so it feels like a lifelong journey of yours, and being an expert in your field. Can I ask a highly basic question? What is thriving exactly for someone that knows absolutely nothing about it? What is it exactly?
Yeah, lovely question. And one that I would love to give a straightforward answer to. So when I first started looking at the topic, I tried to draw together what we knew from the academic literature. So I mentioned already that we started to see the term used in the media, in kind of news articles and things like that. And there didn't seem to be a huge amount of consistency as to what they were saying, what was meant behind it. So I had a look at the literature that existed at that point. And as I reviewed and kind of looked at the common trends and common patterns within it, I came to a definition of thriving and what I understand and mean when I talk about thriving as being the joint experience of development and success. So development here are those kind of progressive enhancements in different areas of our life. So they might be learning new skills, they might be developing new social relationships. For if we're talking about thriving in children or infants, that might be just developing physically as well as sort of psychosocially. And then when we're talking about success, we're talking about kind of those markers and completion of activities and tasks that we're expected to complete. So not only are we doing well at what we're trying to achieve, but we're also kind of moving forwards with that. So that was the way in which I felt best captured what we mean by thriving. So people who are being successful, but are also moving forwards with that at the same time. I then kind of found myself thinking about, well, what does that actually mean? When you ask somebody who's, or if you ask somebody who's working in business, if you ask somebody who's working in a school, if you're talking to a child, if you're talking to an adult, what does development and success look like? Well, I think what we found was that actually there are lots of different markers that people might use to understand their development and success. So that took me on a slightly more kind of narrow focus road. And that was where I guess my interest in sport really led me into try to understand what did it mean to thrive when we talk about sport performers and people who play sport. So that's where a lot of my work sits. And what we learned through some of that work was when we're talking about thriving there, the athletes, the coaches, they talk about thriving being this performance, but also high-level being. So if we think about thriving as development and success, well, the markers that we actually start to see for that, or the indicators of thriving there, would be when we start to see performance at a high level and also people having high levels of well-being. And that work was conducted sort of, as I said, specifically within sport. But actually, if we think about many performance-based domains, and that's sort of any pressurized situation really, where we're expected to deliver a particular skill execution under pressure, then performance is likely to come through, and we'd anticipate well-being being equally important in that as well.
All right, so it doesn't necessarily have to be just a perceived high level of performance. It could even mean high levels of well-being, in a sense. So thriving is really an umbrella term for a lot of different holistic, ways of being, in a sense. Now, but can we, if we were to get into the nitty-gritties, what are some of the most influential psychosocial factors that do influence thriving? Have you been able to determine those?
Yes, we have. So by thinking about thriving as both having performance and well-being, I think it's really important here. We're not just talking about thriving being performing at the very best or just having high levels of well-being. It's those two things joined together, particularly within sport. But what we've seen more broadly in terms of what leads to thriving or what brings about thriving are two psychological variables. I guess let me take you through these. So the first one is what Ryan and Deasy describe as our basic psychological needs. So as humans, they propose that we have three psychological needs. These are to feel autonomous, so to feel like we've got volition, to feel related to other people, so feel that social connection, and also to feel competent, so to feel like we've got a sense of mastery. And what we've found, well, what they propose within their theory and also what we've found within our research is that if, as a human, our three needs are satisfied, so we feel autonomous, we feel competent, we feel related, we're more likely to thrive. And the second factor that's really important here is, or that we've started to look at, is challenge appraisal. So when we think about the demanding situations that we find ourselves in, we make a stress appraisal. So we evaluate the situation based on how demanding it is versus how many resources we feel like we've got able to cope with that. And one of the outcomes of that process, one of the outcomes of that kind of evaluation, is what we might call a challenge appraisal. And that's when we see the situation as being difficult, but also one in which we can overcome and one that's important to us. So when we're thinking about trying to promote thriving, what we're also trying to do is to try to promote these basic psychological needs and try to promote these challenge appraisals. And I think that's where we come across what I've termed within the literature as enablers. Mm-hmm. So we've got personal and contextual enablers that we might focus on. So when we're talking about personal enablers, these are sort of things like the attitudes, our behaviours, our thought processes that are important for us to be able to make a challenge appraisal or to feel like we're autonomous in the environment and competent in the environment. So some of the things that we might look to there are having a positive kind of outlook, having a positive perspective on things.
Okay. And recently there has been this huge trend on actually a lot of awareness on this fake optimism and fake positivity, you know, it's the toxic type. How do you distinguish that from one that actually is proactive?
Yeah, okay, interesting question. I feel like there needs to be a sincerity in that kind of feeling of positivity, that feeling of optimism.
Okay.
That positive interaction with the activities that you're engaging with. So when we're talking about being proactive, it's about seeking out those opportunities to stretch and challenge yourself,
mm-hmm.
Rather than perhaps talking about it and not demonstrating any action behind it.
All right. Okay. I mean, yeah, but what you mentioned in the beginning, that we human beings, honestly, we all do have that inherent drive for self-improvement and growth. It's just that we don't really understand what it is that enables us in a sense. And so our lack of awareness of what it is that enables us to pursue those goals kind of forms roadblocks along the way. So you touched on positive perspective. What about spirituality? Does that play a role in any sense?
Okay, so when I did my first review piece in the area and I looked at human thriving and some of the factors that came through, we did see that spirituality appeared in some of the previous work. It's not a particular enabler that I've focused lots of my work on subsequently, but what we found in that early work was that having a connection,
mm-hmm.
Perhaps having, and I don't think it necessarily needed to be sort of religious faith, so to speak, but having that connection to a wider purpose and a wider value set created perhaps a mindset, perhaps a mentality that allowed people to position themselves better to go on to thrive as they interacted with their daily lives.
All right, got it. So it's not really fundamental, but it kind of facilitates someone's ability to do so, and it doesn't have to consist of having, you know, a faith-based a religion, but it's just the idea of believing in some sort of supernatural power. Is that it, or a higher power?
Yeah. So I think spirituality, along with several other factors, can all help us move towards those. Sort of having our feeling our needs are satisfied and feeling again that we can make that challenge appraisal. So if you're thinking about spirituality, perhaps it gives you that sense of relatedness that you're looking for that enables you to thrive. So for while one person might find that through spirituality, somebody else might find the same satisfaction through their friendship network or through their family network or through their relationships at work. So I think there are a variety, I think, and what's really positive here is that there are such a selection of enablers that exist.
All right.
That people can draw on those different enablers to allow them to feel that their needs are satisfied to go on to thrive.
Interesting. So it's not like we're really restricted to one. You've got a selection of ingredients and you get to choose from whatever it is that you want. You touched on social agents. So is it how exactly could you leverage, you know, your connections to be able to thrive?
Yeah, so this is where the bulk of our work has been moving in recent times, mm-hmm. trying to understand the people who are important to us, but also the depth of those relationships and also the role of the environment. So we've been doing lots of work trying to understand some of those factors. So we understand that perceived social support is, or the perception of social support is important for somebody going on to thrive, but who that support comes from can vary. So that might be parents, like I mentioned a moment ago. It might be employees, peers. It could be within a sporting context. It could be the widest sports support network that you have. So there are lots of different people that you could draw upon for that social support. But what we found was really critical, I'm increasingly seeing has been critical, is the depth and quality of those relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So not that the relationships are there and that they're so superficial, but actually that there's trust in those relationships, there's appreciation, there's understanding. And particularly within one piece of work we did looking at professional rugby players, they identified two key factors for them to thrive in their environment. One was their connection to their teammates,
mm-hmm.
and the other was their connection to the club and the coaches that they were working with. So they wanted to feel valued. They wanted to feel cared for, and they wanted to feel that relationship work both ways. And so, as I said, it's not just having the relationships, but it's actually the quality and depth of those relationships that's really important for enabling people to thrive.
That's all very interesting, especially because on our previous episode, we were discussing the science of romantic relationships, and we certainly touched on attachment styles and the depth of relationships. Do attachment styles play a role here as well? Or are they not really a center of your research?
Yeah, we've looked at attachment within one of our recent pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So these will work into this particular piece of work. We looked at younger athletes, mm-hmm. so those in their adolescence. And we know that attachments are really important at this age for adolescents in general, not just specifically sport. But we were interested in how the adolescents' attachments to their coaches influence their experience of thriving within their sport competition. And what we did find was that as perhaps you would anticipate, that secure attachment to their coaches were important for those athletes going on to thrive. And separately, what we also identified was that actually still maintaining those attachments to their parents at that same time was important to thriving as well. So those attachments don't just have to be with family figures, which I think is probably historically where a lot of the literature is focused.
Mm-hmm.
But what we were noticing here as well is that those attachments and those bonds that the young athletes made with their coaches were equally important to that experience of thriving.
Interesting. And are these the only like personal enablers, or are there more to go into the mix?
Yeah, well, so I guess what we've been describing there are some of the, sort of the more contextual enablers.
Okay.
When we're thinking about personal enablers, things like previous experiences can be really important too. So that might be previous experiences of success, and so that then leads you to feel more confident and competent in those situations, so you're more likely to go on to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
But what we've also found is that previous experiences of thriving help athletes subsequently thrive as well. Okay. So almost a bit like self-fulfilling to some extent, in that if you thrive once, then you develop perhaps a skill set that will enable you to thrive again in the future.
Okay.
And previous thriving almost acts as a bit of a springboard, perhaps, for future thriving.
Okay, so I mean that is the case with someone that has had, you know, a history of maybe some successes, you know, whether it's being able to shoot a hoop or acing a test. But what about the case of, you know, someone that really has not had luck in life, and there was a their life has just been a series of unfortunate events? How do they go about using this science-based evidence to their advantage?
Yeah, okay. So this, of course, is challenging. And I think there are a couple of points that we might be able to draw out here. So when we are able to understand the difficult challenges that we face ourselves in, and trusting in the process and trusting in those people around us, then we still have that ability to go on to thrive. Well, we still have the propensity to go on to thrive. So feeling like we're able to have some sort of control, or being able to manage those demands that we find ourselves in, or the demanding situations we find ourselves in, can enable us to go on to thrive as well. So it's not solely that having thrived before that would allow you to do it, but there are sort of some resources that we could look to build up that might enable people in challenging situations to go on to thrive as well.
Okay, got it. So it's really about the mindset as well. From what you're telling me, so one can really, it's like a muscle. So you train your mind to focus on the positive and kick the negative ones to the curb. And okay, so we touched here on personal enablers, contextual enablers slightly. What is it, if you were to write a shopping list of the key ingredients needed for someone to thrive rather than just, you know, merely survive in life, what would those be?
Yeah, I would really encourage people to think about what it is that enables them to feel connected to others. Mm-hmm. I think that for me is really important. Again, thinking here about that relatedness need, and certainly through our recent work, that depth of relationship to others, I think, is really important. I would be encouraging people to think about how they can develop that sense of control over their actions and what they're doing, taking that proactivity, and then allowing them to experience situations where they can develop mastery. Now, we can find ourselves in difficult situations or novel situations that we might not master straight away, but if we're able to spend time developing that skill set and conquering and mastering those skills, then they're the three things, those three areas. Again, it goes back to that kind of basic needs theory. They're the things that I would look to. But yeah, for me, I think it's the social connections, actually, that I think is probably one of the most important features here. Because I think they underpin how we feel autonomous, or how we feel competent, as well as feeling that closeness to others.
All right. So from what I can understand here is that it's, since you're a sports psychologist, it's like getting in the reps, right? So when you go into the gym, you get in the reps and you build that muscle. So in terms of wanting, you know, to thrive in life, you need to go out there, build social connections, get in those reps, leave your comfort zone slightly, just a bit maybe, to be able to do so. And okay, so obviously the environment, circumstances all play a role. But if we were to, you know, we're talking about the psychology of it, but if we were to think honestly, how is it that we can control it? Can we touch on the biological basis of thriving? And how is it that, realistically speaking, your brain can develop in a way to help you establish those, you know, fundamental skills needed to thrive?
Okay. So we've done a little bit of work on the physiology, or the physiological elements of thriving. Mm-hmm. It's very, very new within the field. So I would be speculative in some of the conclusions, but we did look at, within a sample of athletes, we looked at how their stress responses on the morning of a competitive match may have predicted their subsequent thriving experience. And we looked at two hormones in particular. We looked at cortisol. So cortisol is a stress hormone. So it gets released when we find ourselves in demanding situations. And what we saw was that although they were statistically not significant, we did see some associations between higher levels of stress, as indicated via cortisol, and lower levels of thriving. So if people were able to, so those people who had lower stress responses, perhaps because they saw the situation, the match that they were about to play in, as being less demanding, more within their control, then they were able to go on to thrive. And then on the other side, we also looked at a substance called DHEA, and we saw a more positive association there. And so DHEA was kind of proposed as like the reverse to cortisol, reverse to cortisol in a way. And that showed a more positive association. So whilst we don't know for sure, and we need, it obviously requires further work to understand the physiology here, we've got some early indicators of the types of markers that we might be looking at, certainly to allow us to predict people to thrive. What we didn't do and what we haven't done yet is, whilst people are thriving, in that moment, in that state of thriving, we haven't been measuring their physiology or their neuropsychology at those moments in time. We've been looking at the sorts of things that might be a precursor to it, and the sort of physiological conditions that might exist before somebody goes on to thrive.
All right. I mean, even if this work is still preliminary in its nature, there's a lot of hope, I guess, and there's a lot of, you know, work to be done in the future. And maybe one day you can be able to find the, you know, the neural correlates of what it needs to thrive. Just like recently, there has been evidence on the biological basis of resilience, communication. Maybe one day we'll have ones on thriving. If that goes well. Coming to the end of this episode, we always ask this question, Dr. Brown, and that is, what advice would you give to a student that is seeking to pursue a research career and is still at the beginning, at the early stages of that process?
Yeah, fantastic question. And I really love your question, because I always think about this, because as a lecturer and spending a lot of time with bachelor's undergrad students, this is always at the front of my mind, but also for the doctoral students I work with. For those who are interested in pursuing a research career, I think there's probably a couple of things I would recommend. One is to find a topic that you love. Mm. Find a topic that you're really, really passionate and interested about. And for me, that was the topic of thriving, and I was really fortunate enough to basically write my own PhD application, which allowed me to dictate my program of research. So I was able to put together a 3 years of work which I was driving and I was really passionate about, and I know I was fortunate being able to do that. The second thing that I would say is to read, and to read widely, and by that I mean read across different types of research methods. Sort of 10 years or so now into my career, not quite, maybe a little bit under 10 years, I'm still learning all the time. I'm still learning about different research methods all the time. And some of that's through reading, and some of that's through working with colleagues who have expertise in those areas. So I think, while I started off by saying reading, I think what I'm saying actually is a curiosity. Have a curiosity to learn about different methods, learn about different aspects. You know, today on this podcast, we're talking sort of based on a more neuropsych perspective, whereas much of my work has been more socially leaning. Mm. And so trying to understand those different areas of psychology and how they come together with different methods, show that curiosity is what will take you forward.
Obviously, I think you have that. The innate sense of wanting to translate your work to different, you know, other sides of the field. But as you said, curiosity does play a key role, especially if you were to, you know, pursue a PhD, where it kind of involves you dedicating 3 years of your life to a certain niche topic. So yes, curiosity and having a beginner's mind, having this drive to, you know, this eagerness to learn every day, to pursue knowledge. That's all quite reasonable and valid points that we should all take into consideration, to be honest. Coming to the end of this episode, I would just like to thank you so much, Dr. Daniel Brown, for being here with us and for sharing all this insightful information. I hope to have you back soon again to discuss any future work. And yes, for all you listeners out there, thank you for listening. And more importantly, thank you for your interest in science. I really hope that after listening to this episode, it has become very apparent on how, you know, the science of thriving is about recognizing that well-being is more than just a state of mind. It's a biopsychosocial really phenomenal. And truly, in order to understand how we thrive, we must be able to explore our emotions, engagements, you know, character strengths, and most importantly, our relationships. That way we can all make up our own individualized equation of how to reach our fullest potential. Feel free to leave a review wherever you find your podcast. Thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you soon. Goodbye.